the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
That's right. Now is the time for the talking. What does that mean? I don't know. Sometimes I just say things. Here we go again. That's right. It's all about Bucket Strategy Investing. That's what it is. And you're tuned into the one show that gives you the strategies that you need. It's the one program that gives you the best in money information every single day. And we're standing by, of course, to take your phone calls as we always do. Now, this hour, we're going to start off with a discussion on alternative investments. Now, what do we mean by that? Those assets that don't include things like stocks and bonds and cash. Alternatives to those. So what sort of things would that cover? Well, you do have things like real estate. You've got what are known as BDCs, business development companies, some commodities, limited partnerships, master limited partnerships, all this stuff. Now, large institutional investors, as you may know, have had access to these for many years. But now there are some individual investors who can also own these assets. Now, should you? Well, we're going to talk briefly about what these assets are and who might consider alternative investments in their portfolio and how they may or may not help you. Now, that's coming up here with Professor Plum. I'm Johnny Dean, and again, we're here from Lucia Capital Group. If you've got a question for the Brain Trust, you can give us a call right now. Our live in-studio on-air number is open, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. We do have plenty of lines open right now, ready for you to jump on in and to give us a call. Emails, you can get those to us at wealthed.com, wealthed.com. You just click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. Professor Rick Plum, the professor, our longtime trusted Brain Trust Associate Advisor. He's an advisor. He's here again courtesy of the folks at Lucia Capital Group. They bring you this hour of the program. If you need a bucket strategy, a plan put together specifically for you, one that fits your goals, you can call the professor or anyone at Lucia Capital Group at their off-air number, 800-644-1150. Remember, preparing yourself for whatever might happen, that's one of the keys to a successful retirement plan. You do need to make sure that you have a plan for whatever might happen down the line. Anything can happen. Once again, the number at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. Talk to them, too, about anything that we talk about on this program, whether it's alternative investments. Maybe you hear something, you're wondering, well, I don't know, is that going to fit into something that I need, something that I have? Should I have this? They'll talk to you about it. Again, 800-644-1150. Off the air. On the air, 877-PLANNER. You can call us right now. Ask us about anything, any issue that's on your mind from a financial standpoint, 877-752-6637. So if you talk about things like alternative investments, Professor Plum, some people get a little skittish about them. You know, people like
They like tradition.
Yeah, they do.
They like the same. They like things that they've heard about for the last 40, 50 years.
Yes, that's right. You have stocks and dividends and
bonds.
Bonds
and
that
interest
pay interest. Yeah, exactly.
Cash, which pays nothing right now.
Yeah, but it's still cash, and you've got that standing by, and it's all liquid. And anything beyond that, I think oftentimes people tend to say, I don't want to know about that. That sounds a little too odd.
Well, and for people have used alternatives without even knowing it. I mean, there are lots of different types of alternatives. You know, one of the more talked about, although most people don't get a chance to use them, talked about alternatives over the past 20 years were hedge funds. Those are hedges. Those are alternatives because they are designed in the way they manage to do something different than stocks, bonds, cash. They use inverses. They use other things to try to do things. I mean, all the
hedge funds.
I mean, so it's a matter of what is it that you're trying to do, and how can, I mean, what is the goal of an investment portfolio? The goal is to earn a return and somehow not lose a lot of money. And so one of the things that alternatives try to do, it doesn't mean that alternatives are less risky. In many cases, many eyes, alternatives can potentially be more risky in the fact that they tend to be, not always, but tend to be more illiquid. So what they look at trying to do is find an investment that has a reasonable rate of return, not dissimilar from the market, but that the volatility is dissimilar. Now, it's not that they're not volatile. That's not what I'm saying. It's just that it happens potentially at different times. When the market's going down doesn't necessarily mean that your investment is going down. On the other side, when the market's going up doesn't necessarily mean your investment in an alternative universe is going up. So they act at different times, and what they do is they tend, not always, but they tend to have a moderating effect on the severe swings that a portfolio invested in very similar types of assets We'll have from time to time.
Now, wasn't there a time, or does it still exist, where you have stocks on the one hand, you got bonds on the other, one is going up, one's supposed to go down, they're supposed to balance each other out, and you have some cash sitting around just in case?
Well, a lot
is
of that
not the, true anymore?
It's not as true anymore. And a lot of the, we used to look at international stocks versus domestic stocks as being a little bit, now they tend to be a lot more what they call correlated, more highly correlated. Not one for one, but more tightly correlated than they used to be in the past. So things are going up and down a lot at the same time with the more traditional investments. And so what we're looking for is something that maybe doesn't act like a stock, maybe doesn't act the same way as everything else in our portfolio. And that's where these alternatives come in. And they come in lots of different flavors. And how you go about using them depends on what you're actually trying to accomplish. Are we looking at growth? Are we looking at income? One of the more popular areas is using some alternative type investments for income generation, because what else is there? I mean, cash is not generating much income. Bonds aren't generating much income. If you look at the, we look at the 10 years, 10-year treasury is kind of our little flag to tell us how fast the wind's blowing, and it's at still less than 2% on a 10-year treasury. So, and that's typically, 10-year treasuries, it means 10 years. You're buying into it for 10 years. So if we're buying into something for 10 years, is there a way to potentially get a little bit better rate of return? Now, to do it, you're going to have to take different risks, but you can potentially use these alternative investments. The two main flavors that are out there today, well, three really, are real estate and business development companies, and then master limited partnerships and things of that nature. Master limited partnerships I'll set off the side because they have a different kind of a different take on things, and they tend to be fairly volatile, again, at different times, but they also tend to have very high cash flows, usually.
You mean you can get a lot out of them if you're doing it right?
The yield tends to be high, but you have to put up with a lot. And we've seen a lot of negative volatility in them in the last year or so because most master limited partnerships are in the energy sector. And what has happened to the energy sector in the last couple of years? Nothing good, really. So what we're going to talk about mostly are high income generating assets. Now, you can get them in a traditional flavor where you can buy and sell them on the stock market every day. You can get them in the idea of an ETF or
exchange traded fund,
or just a mutual fund or a traded stock. The problem when it's available in that type of a chassis, traded on every day, it tends to lose its discorrelation. Now it starts acting very much like the rest of the stock market. And the reason one of the reasons you were buying it in the first place was so that it didn't act like the stock market. But once you put that liquidity on it and the ability to buy and sell, just like anything else, people tend to treat it just like a stock market investment because it is. And this is where people sometimes hesitate at the alternatives, because to get the discorrelation in many respects, you have to go to the less liquid variety of it. That's what makes it act differently.
Something like real estate, in other words, we've seen people add real estate to their portfolios.
Right.
And we've seen the dangers of people who are trying to dabble in the real estate market and keep it as liquid as possible, as short-term as possible.
Well, there are times where you can flip properties, and there are times when you definitely cannot flip properties. So anytime you're buying real estate, while you may be able to make a profit in a short period of time, most people need to have a long-term time perspective. Most people I know that have done very well with real estate didn't do it by flipping it. They did it because they bought and held and used the income to pay off the debt and to buy another property and kept going, and they just kept adding to it that way without ever selling. Kind of the Warren Buffett idea of real estate. Buy it, hold it, don't sell it until many years down the line. So real estate is one area. Now, real estate has a lot of different styles too. Real estate isn't just one category. Real estate has a lot of subcategories, multifamily, industrial, self-storage. You've got Class A business.
See, most people,
retail
when they think,
centers. You've got all these different healthcare.
Right. Now, when people think real estate, I think most often they think, well, I'll buy an apartment house, or I'll buy a condo
an
and
eight-plex.
I'll rent it out. And that's real estate. But, people say, well, that's going to take a whole lot of money to invest in, and I don't have that kind of scratch.
Well, and that's why Congress created the ability to have a real estate trust where you can pool money together. So John puts in $30,000, I put in $30,000, anybody else, we pool up to $1 billion or $2 billion worth of capital, and we hire somebody to go out and buy and manage and run the real estate for us. And we sit back and we collect whatever cash flow, net cash flow is available.
So they're out buying whatever, apartment houses or, I mean, it could be anything, really.
So rather than John and I starting this accumulation phase, we say, John, you know, we need to go buy some real estate. So let's find a bunch of investors. There is somebody who does real estate. John, I don't know real estate. At least I don't think you do. I don't know it very well.
Well, I don't know it very well. Let's just pretend like I know nothing about it.
Yeah. No, so instead of he and I trying to start a company that's going to manage and do things, a company that has done real estate, that manages real estate, usually will start this pool. They'll usually put in some money, and then they'll start looking for investors. And they accumulate the money, and they decide what to buy. But they're going to have a strict charter. We're only going to buy this type of property in this kind of area or something.
Yeah, so now the question, I guess, is what can this do for you, viewers and listeners out there? How can this help you? Well, there's some potential for it. We'll tell you a little bit more about it when we come back. Anything else that's on your mind, you can call and ask us, 877-PLAN. Our lines are open. Brain Trust standing by. We're coming right back. I would suggest you stay, if given the choice. You know, we're here. We stay, you stay. How's that? Thank you. 877-PLANNER, our number. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, having some fun with you. I had a lot of fun, as a matter of fact, Professor Plum, last Saturday at the workshop in Portland.
And it didn't rain on us.
It's amazing how that happens, huh? Amazing how that happens. Anyway, you know, there are more coming up, and we should remind you, too, that the Brain Trust kind of travels all over the country, both in the spring and the fall. And if you want to know where the Brain Trust is going to be next, good thing to do is to check out our website, which is wealthed.com, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealthed.com. The 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshops continue, presented by Lucia Capital Group. We got a few more that we're going to be doing throughout the rest of the year. So once again, if you want to find out where the Brain Trust will be hanging out, you go there to wealthed.com. It's in the Live Events tab. Join us. We would love to see you at any of them or all of them and meet the Brain Trust. It's a whole lot of fun. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. We're going to talk more about some of this income that you can get from these alternative investments like real estate. Want to take a few calls, though, as we always do on this program. We still have three lines open at 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Let's move next, Professor Plum, to Mike in Las Vegas. Hello, Mike.
How you doing?
Doing great.
I'm just calling. A friend of mine, his wife just passed away this week recently, and unexpectedly, I should say.
Okay.
And he works full-time. She's been on Social Security disability for years now. Is there any survivor benefit from that? Or
sure, maybe. Now, is he receiving his Social Security yet, or he's still working?
No, he's working full-time.
How old is he?
He's 61, I believe.
Okay, if he were to, now, do you know whether the benefit that his wife was receiving before she passed is larger than the benefit he will receive at his full retirement age?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, if he's working and he's under full retirement age, he'll probably not be able to get anything because of the retirement earnings test. But if he were not working, he could apply for a widow's benefit, and he could start receiving a widow's benefit. The benefit that he receives will be based on what she was earning from Social Security, receiving, I should say, from Social Security, reduced if he's under full retirement age. But by doing it, when he ultimately does retire, if he takes her benefit, whether it's reduced or whether he does it at his full retirement age, he can leave his benefit to grow until age 70 and then go back in at age 70 and apply for his own benefit. So it gives him some money in the short run while he's waiting for his benefit to grow all the way to 70. But as I mentioned, working full-time means he's probably making more than $16,000 a year. And when you're making more than $16,000 a year and you're under full retirement age, the retirement earnings test will have an impact on whatever benefit you receive.
Okay. Okay, so he can if he does retire, then he could file for hers?
Either retirement or age 66, whichever happens first.
Okay. And then he can hold off on his till 70.
Yeah. Now, he's 61 this year. He'll be 62 next year?
Yeah.
Okay, his full retirement age is 66 in 2 months. But so whatever happens first, he quits working and he retires, or he hits 66 in 2 months, he applies for a spousal, it's not a spousal, it's a widower's benefit.
Widower's benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. I wanted to straighten that out. I know his his head, and he's all screwed up right now. So.
Well, yeah, I can't even imagine. But as long as he's working, he's not going to get a benefit.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks for all your help.
Okay, sure. Mike, thank you. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Yeah, the retirement earnings test.
It's not just for retirement anymore.
No, it is. In fact, it really never was necessarily, but it'll wipe out really anything.
Yeah, right.
Disability, I guess, has a little bit of leniency.
A different set of rules.
Yeah.
There's a trial work period where you can earn almost any amount of money and still receive your disability benefit. But once you've passed the trial work period, then there's a tighter monthly number, you know, for determining whether or not you're still eligible for your Social Security disability. You know, the number for a retiree is $1,310 a month. I think the number for a disabled individual, once they get past the trial work period, is like $800 or $900 a month.
Yeah,
it's a much lower number. But the retirement earnings test affects a child in care benefit. If you have a child that's 16, 17 years old, that's receiving a dependent benefit, whether from a retired individual or a deceased person, and they go out and get a job and make more than the $15,720 this year,
It can wind up wiping out everybody's benefit, including your own, your spouse's, and your child in care benefit, all in one swell foop.
If I'm the one receiving a retirement benefit, and I've got dependent children and a dependent spouse that are all receiving benefits on my work record, and I go out and get another job before full retirement age, and they reduce my benefit because of the earnings, they're going to reduce everybody else's too. Now, if my wife goes out and gets a job, she'll lose her benefit, but I won't lose mine because it's my work record that's being pulled, not hers. I mean, in that case.
Yeah, in that case. Now, if you were going to try to take a benefit off of her in that case.
Then I lose it.
Then you lose it. So once again.
Where is the benefit coming from? Whose work record is the benefit coming from? If the person who's working has an issue with their retirement earnings test, anybody who's pulling a benefit from their work record will also have an issue.
Yeah, so what happens is, for those of you who aren't necessarily familiar with this, what happens on the retirement earnings test is you're allowed to make up to this year, it's still $15,720 a year. You're allowed to do that, make up to $15,720, and you can still keep all of your Social Security benefit. Doesn't matter.
For the year.
But if you start to make more than that, then they're going to start taking away some of your benefit, and it's $2.
$1.
I'm sorry. Well, it's for every $2 that you make,
you lose
$1 of benefits. Of benefits, right.
That's if you're under full retirement age for every month of the year.
Well, we're assuming, yes. You have to be under. Once you're full retirement age, you can make as much as you want.
Right, and in the year that you turn full retirement age, there's a different threshold and a different give back. But a lot of people will say, well, what about, you know, if I retire halfway through the year? You're talking about $15,720 for the year. And they do use an annual test. So how much did you use for the year? Well, people say, what if I retire in September, August or something, where I've already made $50,000, $60,000, $80,000 for the year? There is a one-time exception to the annual test where you can apply a monthly earnings test to it instead of the annual test.
Meaning what?
Meaning you can only do it once in your lifetime.
No, I mean,
but what they're going to do is instead of looking at the $15,720, they're going to say in the months that you were receiving, only in the months you were receiving a retirement benefit from Social Security, what were your earnings in those months? And as long as it wasn't more than the monthly equivalent of $15,720, $1,310 right now, then we won't take away any of your Social Security. So you could work, you know, if your birthday like mine is in June, or I say I wanted to retire in June, I'm 63 years old, I could make $1,000,000 January through May, and then I quit at the end of May and I start receiving my Social Security in June. That 1 year, if I choose to use the monthly test that year, they will not look at the $1,000,000 of earnings because I didn't earn those while I was receiving my Social Security benefit. They're only going to look at earnings that I receive while I'm receiving my benefit, and as long as I don't receive more than $1,310 a month in that year, I'm okay. I don't have to give any of it back.
You just made $1,000,000 the first 5 months of the year, and you're going to complain if they start to take away some of your.
You seen the taxes I had to pay on that $1,000,000?
$2,000.
I had to pay the entire $15,720 in taxes on that $1,000,000 in that very first year.
Because you were self-employed, you're saying.
Actually, it would have been a lot more than that because Medicare goes on forever.
Yes, it does. So you would have been.
I had to pay the full $12,400 of FICA. You know.
Yeah. So after all that, and the
I want my
taxes,
benefit.
Yeah, what's $1,000,000 worth? You know, $600,000.
I want my benefit.
How are you supposed to get by on 600 grand? Okay. All right. Oh, we got to take a break. All right. We got more coming up. Lines open. 877-PLANNER. Give us a call. 877-752-6637. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, the Brain Trust, here, coming right back on Bucket Strategy Investing. Briefcase full of blues? No. This wasn't on that one. I don't think so. Welcome to the program, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. And standing by to take your phone calls, 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Room on the phones for you right now, so if you have a question, you give us a call.
This soundtrack, because this is the one that Cab Calloway did.
Yes, right. This is the one where he would have been talking
right.
at this point, right?
Right.
But this is just, yeah, okay. All right, that's at 877-PLANNER. Oh, and WealthEd.com. We'll get some emails shortly here. And speaking of WealthEd.com, there's another program coming up there tomorrow. If you're watching live, it's on Tuesday afternoons, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern time, only at WealthEd.com. It's called The Social Security Show. Guess what we talk about? We talk about Social Security. We just had a couple of calls on Social Security. So there's a lot of interest in it, a lot of questions and all that stuff. Social Security Show, we talk about strategy, we talk about rules, we talk about laws and all that stuff. And it's every week, as I said, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern. It's only at WealthEd.com. It's a very fast half-hour programming. So you need to tune in and see the whole thing. And by the way, speaking of Social Security and the rules and all that, they're changing. They're about to change, or they have, actually.
They're in the midst of changing.
They are. They're always in the midst of changing. But, you know, for those of you who don't quite understand how these changes work or what has happened to them, the question, of course, is your filing strategy still going to work? There's your big question right there. Professor Plum, he has put together this free guide on the big changes coming to Social Security. You can download it right now, as a matter of fact. You visit our Facebook page. You go to Facebook, you type in WealthEd, or search WealthEd, and you'll find our page there. Or just go to our website, WealthEd.com, and there's a Facebook logo right there in the upper right part of the corner. Whatever. It's up in the right corner. Why can't I talk today? This is driving me nuts.
That was good. That's a... Not used to seeing you get that tongue-tied.
Find us on Facebook. How's that? All right. There it is. And you can download it. It's free. Absolutely free. Link right there. Facebook.com. Okay. That's it. I covered that. All right. 877-PLANNER. I told you that. Lines open right now. 877-752-6637. We have a couple of lines open for you. So we were talking before about alternative investments. And we specifically got into real estate here just briefly. First of all, why would somebody consider real estate? How does this affect their portfolio one way or the other?
Well, depending upon the reason you're buying it, in many cases you can get a reasonable cash flow, which is important to a lot of people, but that cash flow can be used to dollar cost average into the market, can be used to help support living needs, it can be used... It's cash flow. It can be used nicely. But they're also looking for hopefully some appreciation out of it. So real estate is one of those areas. And it tends to act differently than the stock market. And people will say, in 2008, everything went down. Well, actually, no, the market went down in 2008. Real estate really didn't drop until after the market had started recovering. So the market dropped and then started coming back up. That's when the real estate market dropped, unless you were in a publicly traded real estate investment. And then it dropped right along with the market. And that's why we do things like we do to try to get some difference in market returns. Some, you know, something zigging when the other's zagging, something going up when the other's going down. But in the whole time, with done correctly, and you know, you can get a little bit of cash flow. That cash flow can be used very nicely to help pay, you know, to dollar cost average. And you know, even if you don't need income right now, it can have a moderating effect. It's not that it's less volatile. I'm not saying that it's less risky. It just has a different characteristic, a different component, a different time horizon. And so it tends to act very well within a portfolio. Now, real estate is one way. And like I said in one of the earlier segments, there's lots of different types of real estate. And at different times of a business cycle, different types of real estate, it does different things. Most people, when you think of real estate, they think of a house. They think of the rental across the street or down the block. Houses, primary residence, are just one type of real estate. And they have one set of characteristics and how they react to different information. Other types of real estate acts differently, whether it's a multifamily, you know, issue or something of that nature, whether it's healthcare. I mean, there's different characteristics.
What you do is you wind up pooling your money with a whole bunch of other investors to buy things that perhaps, ordinary investors just by themselves wouldn't be able to buy. Right. And they're able to take a portion of that and get some income from it.
I mean, a lot of people think, okay, I'm going to buy the house next door as a rental or the one down the street. But the problem with that is you have one tenant, and you lose one tenant, you lose all of your income. And most of the time, you don't have enough money to go out and pay cash for the property. So you've got leverage on the property, which means that you are going to have to come out of pocket to feed that property while you don't have a tenant. By buying bigger units, I mean, if you look at an apartment complex, you know, 100-unit apartment complex or a larger apartment complex, there's always a vacancy. In fact, if it's got 100% occupancy, they are not charging enough rent. There's always a vacancy when you get into these big areas. But there's, you know, if it's done right, there's usually 80 or 90% occupancy too. And it can run very nicely with a nice cash flow, even after, you know, all the expenses, even on a lower. And that's one of the things you look for. Where is my break-even occupancy? If it's 70, 60%, and you're typically running 80 or 90%, you got some extra cash flow. But multifamily is just why I'm not saying that's what you should be buying. It's just one of those areas. Healthcare is a big popular area right now. Data center is very popular right now because they have to be. There's lots of different types of real estate. Just like you buy different types of stock, you buy different types of real estate. But that's only one part of the alternative world. There's also business development companies. We've had three or four major finance reforms passed in the past decade. Frank Dodd being one and some others.
Dodd-Frank. Frank Dodd's a buddy of mine down the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy, though. Dodd-Frank wasn't.
No.
It really screwed things up. I'm dyslexic, I guess. I don't know. It's just one of those things that things have changed. It's very difficult. If you're IBM, you're Exxon, most of the time it's pretty easy for you to get a loan. If you wanted to go out and borrow $1 billion or $100 million, a lot of places will loan to you. If you're a small person, if we've got equity in our house, or I could probably get a signature loan today, I could get a loan. But if you're a mid-sized company and you need $50 million to expand, you're a privately held company, you're worth $500 million, and you wanted another $50 million to expand, $25 million to expand, you can't just go to the local bank. They don't make loans like that. And Wall Street's gonna, why would I want to spend my time dealing with you? Because of the way that the new reforms have happened, it's very difficult for those types of companies to get loans. So these business development companies, basically, they're there to help loan money to these businesses. Where do they get the money? They get it from you and me. And we pool our money, and they loan it out. Now, when a company like this borrows money, they're not borrowing it at 3 and 4 and 5%. They're borrowing it at 9, 10, 11, 12%. And so the cash flow comes through. You know, the company that puts it all together takes a little off the top and sends the rest down to the shareholders. Is it perfect? There is no such thing as a perfect investment. Does it tend to have higher, stable cash flow? Yes. One of the things it does, though, is that in many cases, the majority of the loans are what are known as floating rate loans. So it takes away some of that interest rate risk that a typical bond would have.
So let's just say, who should be considering something like real estate? I mean, there are people who say, well, I can't tolerate any risk at all. But then there are others who say, well, I'd like a little bit of, I'll take a little bit of risk in order to get some income off of this.
And one of the bigger risks is liquidity. Let's make no mistake. This, many cases, these are illiquid. You are in it for the ride. But so is real estate buying it. If I buy a house down the street, I spend $200,000 on the house down the street, even if I pay cash for it. A week later, I want to sell it. Will I be able to get my $200,000 out of it? Probably not, because I'm going to have to pay somebody to sell it. And that's going to take a couple percent, whatever the case may be. So real estate in its very nature is not a liquid investment. And so you have to deal with the idea that it's going to be, you're going to hold on to it, and you may not have the choice of when to sell it. You may have to deal with holding it longer than you wanted to. But anytime, same thing with a stock, even though it's technically, by today's definition, liquid, where you can turn it into cash pretty quickly, you have no idea what it's going to be worth. And the fact that you can turn it into cash doesn't mean you should. Unfortunately, a lot of people in 2008, 2009 used their right to sell, and sold out of their stock portfolios at the wrong time. They should have held on, but they just felt that they couldn't. If they would have held on for a couple of years, they would have been okay. They wouldn't have lost 30-40%. So, I mean, when I talk to people about real estate, a lot of people don't like tying their money up, and then that's not appropriate for them. Same thing with business development companies. When you make a loan to a company for 5-7 years, There's no secondary market for it. It's very difficult to get your money back until they pay it off, other than the interest that they're paying. So you've got to go into it with the right idea. But if somebody is looking for something that has a potentially better rate of return than bonds right now, it is a bond alternative in many respects, with some volatility, lack of liquidity, but an overall enhancement, hopefully, to the overall portfolio from a risk-return relationship standpoint, alternatives can be a big factor in that area.
Yeah, they can. As you mentioned before, there are other things too, not just, you know, business development companies, real estate investment trusts, things like that, master and limited partnerships. You got those. You got some limited partnerships. I'm not saying that people
royalty
should.
Trusts. You don't hear much about those lately, but.
Well, you mean because, like for oil and gas or something like that?
We used to see these Canadian royalty trusts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It used to pay out, and I think they probably still do pay out, a fairly nice yield. Very nice. But there's huge swings in price.
Yeah, there are. And then people just aren't ready to stomach that anymore. Okay, we got some more things to talk about. If you got a question on anything at all, any money question, the Brain Trust is standing by to answer those questions for you. So take advantage. 877-PLANNER, our number. 877-752-6637. If you own these one of these real estate investment trusts, we'll tell you a little bit more about some of these new rules that are coming up right after this. PLANNER, PLANNER, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, talking to you about your money. And you got questions? We got some lines open right now. 877-752-6637. That spells out PLANNER, PLANNER. Another hour coming up in most cities across the country. So if you're inclined to tune in and call, we hope you will. 877-752-6637. As I said, the next hour, plenty of stuff to talk about in the next hour as well. Got some more things on alternative investments. In fact, I should mention this too, because somebody had a question on this. If you want to know where to sign up for the next workshop, go to wealthed.com, our website. There's a live events tab there. You'll find out the entire schedule, as a matter of fact, through the next couple of months. So once again, wealthed.com. Check it out there. Okay, now, on these alternative investments, there's a new rule that's supposed to be taking effect or has taken effect. And it has to do with people who are holding any non-traded type of asset.
Or anybody who will purchase.
Yes, real estate investment trust. Talk about what this Rule 1502 is.
Well, it's going to require that the underlying investment be carried at the underlying net asset value. Right. We were talking earlier about you pool money. Well, when a company puts one of these together, they're pooling money from you, they're pooling money from other people. And they haven't actually necessarily bought the real estate yet. So how do they put a value on it? Well, they just set a share price. You're buying into this company at $10 a share, $20 a share, $25 a share, whatever they've set it at. So I buy in 1,000 shares and for $25 a share, give them $25,000. And so everybody pools their money. And then they go out and they buy the, use it to loan out to the companies. They buy the real estate. They do whatever it is that they're doing with it. But there's costs involved. And so, unfortunately, a lot of people thought that if I'm putting my $25,000 into it, then I'm buying $25,000 worth of real estate. No, you weren't getting that much in the actual ground, so to speak. There are expenses and there are fees. And so a lot of people didn't realize that, yes, you were maybe told the fees. You were given a prospectus about an inch thick of legalese and all the fees are in there. But a lot of people just didn't read that. So they came out with this rule that says if you own one of these that has not been price to market, meaning they haven't gone through and actually appraised all the underlying investments and reset the value of the shares to the underlying investment, come April this year, they're going to force them to show it as net of upfront fees. Now, reality is there's about 10 or 12%, depending on the one, that's where you need to look at it. So if you put in $10 a share, right away it's going to show in April at $8.80. Unless they've repriced it since then. Now, the first step into this rule was several years back where they said, okay, through the offering period where they're raising money, where they're selling more shares, we'll let you keep it at the, let's say it was a $10 share price, who knows what it was. But within 18 months of when you stop raising money, you have to reappraise everything in the portfolio. And when they reappraise it, you get a new share price.
Well, and that would mean that it's going to be adjusted downward.
Right. Well, maybe not. Some have adjusted upward because the underlying securities, the underlying real estate, whatever it was,
has already
actually
up.
Appreciated.
Yeah.
That's not normal.
No.
But, I mean, so they're looking, and some of them went down even more because they were buying property through that 9, 10, 11 downturn in real estate. And so it's all a matter of when does it reprice? And so, and because when they're raising money, you know, they're raising money, they're selling new shares, and they put that money in cash until they can find something to do with it, or they can raise enough money to actually deploy it. It's difficult to reappraise that many times. It costs money to appraise properties and things.
Sure.
So they were what the FINRA is doing is saying, fine, you don't have to reappraise it, but you do have to show it net of upfront costs. So if you were to buy it, you know, in the next May, June, you put in your $1,000. Well, you wouldn't do it for $1,000. Typically, these are a little bit larger investments. You put $10,000 and $20,000 in, and it's going to show up at 88-90% of that number because that's what they expect to go into the ground after the selling expenses.
All right. So the whole thing is this: that more than likely,
it's about transparency.
Which they need to have. So more than likely, when you put the money in, when you put your money into these one of these, say real estate investment trusts or any of these non-traded type assets, you're going to see, quite likely, you're going to see, I put in this much and it's already worth immediately on paper, it's worth less.
Right. It's like a front-end load,
yeah,
if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah.
And it's just trying to remind you what the person who sold it to should have been telling you up front.
Now, we also had a question, what do you do with the income that you get, or what are you supposed to do with the income that you get from these they mentioned REITs, but any of these alternative investments. You said earlier that these are designed to, in many cases, give you some income, perhaps.
Well, it depends on what your strategy calls for. It depends on where you are in your strategy. Some people, depending upon what's going on, will reinvest, if they allow this, back into the real estate for a year or two just to get it back to, you know, make up that front end cost.
Yeah.
Some people will just start taking the income and living off of it. I'm not a big fan of using dividends to pay for my living expenses because I want to reinvest dividends into a volatile area. With the real estate investment trust, the BDCs, it's not a volatile area because it's not traded. There's no real swings in the share price. So using the income is potentially an okay thing because we're using it to supplement what we can't get out of bucket number one from a return
right.
standpoint. But if you're several years away from retirement and the account is large enough, it's not always that easy to do with a small account, it's a great way to dollar cost average. You can either build up cash that you're going to spend in a year or two, or if you're more than a year or two out, you can just dollar cost average it. They usually pay either monthly or quarterly, and just dollar cost average into the market. And so I mentioned I don't like using dividends in a volatile environment to live off of. I like to reinvest it. Well, this gives me a dividend or a distribution that I can dollar cost average into a volatile market, assuming I don't need to live on it.
Which, by the way, it can oftentimes help you. If you're dollar cost averaging
Doesn't always.
No, but it can. If you're dollar cost averaging into a volatile market, it can actually work to your advantage.
It's a form of dollar cost averaging, kind of. You know, you're putting a systematic dollar amount into a volatile investment.
Just like
not the same investment.
Right. Just like your when you put your money into your 401k.
Just another source of money going in.
Yeah, exactly. So again, these are not for everybody.
No, they're not for everybody.
I want to stress that.
But no investment is for everybody. Other than a bank account, I mean, everybody's got to have at least some amount of money in a bank account.
Well, you would assume. I mean, you know,
checking account.
Put it, you know, dig a hole in the backyard and, you know, put it in some airtight container. But of course, the problem there is that you could lose money, your purchasing power.
Right. I mean, once you get past your everyday bank account, your savings account, your emergency fund, there is no one investment for everybody.
No.
I mean, and so how does it fit in what you're trying to accomplish? Does it fit into what you're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, so these are some of the questions you should be asking, and perhaps your financial advisor has talked to you about these things. Are they appropriate for you? It's a question that only you and your advisor can answer. And if you have questions on any of this stuff that perhaps we've talked about this hour, you can talk to Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group about your specific situation. The off-air number, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. Another hour is just ahead. Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, Indiana, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.